Welcome to the Jacob's Well podcast. These messages are intended to feed you some great stuff that you can really dig your teeth into all week and beyond. That's why you can find it anytime, along with other great resources and ways to keep the conversation going at jacobs-well.net/leftovers. Enjoy the message.
All right. I'll ask you guys to take a seat. And I want you all to get inspired. So why don't we watch a clip that's gonna help get us going today? Well, okay, I'll fill in the words.
Wife, two sweet kids. His life was a mess. And you know why? Because of the fear. Afraid his business would fail. Afraid his children would fall victim to foul play. Afraid his hair would fall out and his wife would stop loving him. Afraid of death. But death's a breeze. You ever heard anyone coming back to complain? No. It's life that'll kill you.
Hey, Matt, give people a wake-up call.
A prisoner. And Thomas was a prisoner of fear.
Amen, preacher.
So he got himself a lawyer for his business, a guard for his babies, a $2,000 hairpiece, and a world-class doctor. But was Tom happy?
No.
No, you know. Because when Thomas finally came to me, he still had the fear. And the fear is bigger than lawyers and doctors. The fear is bigger than money or real estate. There's only one thing bigger than the fear, my friends. Only one thing. And that one thing is the faith. Faith that the universe will need his skills. Faith that this woman loves what's in his soul, not what's on his head. Faith that his children will be protected, not by a man with a 357 Magnum, but by the man with the 12-gauge supercharged grenade launcher on him. And that man, brothers and sisters, that one man is one man, and one man only. That man is Jesus Christ. And if you want to feel happy, all you gotta do, if you want to feel love, all you gotta do, if you want to feel safe, if you want to feel strong, if you want to walk tall, all you gotta do. All right, who's pumped up? Huh? I am gonna teach you guys about hope and healing, and I'm gonna use Jesus's 12-gauge supercharged grenade launcher of love. Are you ready? So I'm gonna continue the words that my brother Steve on the video started with here, and I'm gonna tell you, if you wanna know what it is to experience prosperity, if you want to know what it is to experience peace, if you want to know what it's like to be tall and not feel small, if you want to know what it's like to be real and get healed, all you got to do is get saved. Okay? All you got to do is say the right words. The magic ones, all you've got to do is follow the rules. All you've got to do is believe hard enough and send a check to 3751 17th Avenue South, Minneapolis, Minnesota, 55407. All right? Get them in the mail, people. Let's go. Okay, so I'm being a little facetious here. Was I laying it on a little thick? I don't know. I'm doing this for a reason, though. And, you know, there are some folks out there who are very successful at filling their pockets through messages like these. And we need that to stop, because that's not what the business of Jesus is all about. This is your life.
And this is what Jesus offers us. It is hope and healing. And it's a free gift. And we're going to explore that together today. So, I want to start with this this story that's on the screen here. And it is a big story, so big that it doesn't fit on the screen. But I want to share some stories with you. And actually, we have a Sunday paper here. And on the back of it, you can follow along with the outline as I go through it. This story that I'm going to start with actually isn't printed for you, but it is one of the soap readings this week. If you look in the top corner, you see that box that says soap, which is just a simple way that we can engage the Bible and some of the questions that it causes us to wrestle with. And it's a really simple way to just get your hands dirty with the Bible. So actually, every story that I'm talking about today is one of these soap readings for the week. But let me start with this story from John chapter 4. Now Jesus was back in Cana of Galilee, the place where he made the water into wine. And meanwhile, in Capernaum, there was a certain official from the king's court whose son was sick. And when he heard that Jesus had come from Judea to Galilee, he went and asked that Jesus would come down and heal his son. He was on the brink of death. But Jesus put the man off. He said, "Unless you people are dazzled by a miracle, you refuse to believe." But the court official would not be put off. He said, "Come down. This is life and death for my son." And Jesus has a simple reply: "Go home. Your son lives." So the man believes the words that Jesus spoke, and he headed home. And on his way back, his servants met him about halfway, and they announced, "Your son lives." He asked them what time he began to get better, and they said, "The fever broke yesterday afternoon at about 1:00. And the father knew that that was the exact time that Jesus said, "Your son lives." That clinched it for him. Not only he, but his entire household believed. Now that was the second sign that Jesus had revealed after turning the water into wine. So it's a great story. And it's one of those stories that if we took out of context and just isolated it, it'd be real easy for me to come up here and preach to you about hope and healing and all those things that you want or desperately need in your life, that you could get them if you just believed hard enough. But that's not how it works. And actually, we're going to find that out by looking at the next story, which comes from John chapter 5. And that one is printed for you in your Sunday paper. And feel free to write on these and jot notes as we go along. So let's look at John chapter 5 together. And Jesus just healed this man, and now he's going to continue what Jesus does. He heals people. So he's back in Jerusalem, and in Jerusalem, there's this sheep gate. And by that sheep gate, there was a pool. And in Hebrew, it was called Bethesda. It had 5 alcoves. Now, hundreds of sick people were there, blind, crippled, paralyzed, and they were filled in these alcoves. And there was one man there who had been an invalid for 38 years. Jesus saw him stretched out on his mat by the pool, and he knew that he'd been there for a long time. So he says to him, "Do you want to get well?" The sick man said, "Sir, when the water's stirred up, I don't have anybody to put me in the pool. By the time I get there, somebody else is already in it." You see, this man believes that there's healing properties of this pool. It must be some kind of spring or something. So when it bubbles up, he's trying to get into the water to be healed. So Jesus says to the man, "Get up, take your bedroll, and start walking." And the man was healed on the spot. He picked up his bedroll and walked off. Another miracle. So the day that Jesus did this happened to be the Sabbath. And the Sabbath is the day of rest, right? You're not supposed to do any work. So the Jewish religious leaders stopped the healed man who was carrying around his bedroll, and they said to him, "It's the Sabbath. You can't carry that bedroll around. It's against the rules." But he told them, "Well, the man who made me well, he told me to carry it. He said, take your bedroll and start walking." So they asked him, "Who gave you the order to take up your bedroll and walk?" But the healed man didn't know, for Jesus had slipped away in the crowd. It's really interesting that we have this story in John chapter 4 where this man believes the words that Jesus says and he experiences healing. And then the exact story, the next story, Jesus heals a man. The guy doesn't even know who Jesus is. It doesn't say anything about him believing. It just says that Jesus heals him. So if we have any of these things working in our life that say, you're not working hard enough, or you're not believing hard enough, or you just need to be a better person in order to experience this healing, I'm sorry, but that's not biblical. That's a bunch of BS is really what it is. So I want to point out another thing that's in this story. These religious leaders approach this man, and they don't say, "Hey, Carl, great to see you're walking. I know it's been 38 years since you got up. So yeah, how'd it happen? Gosh, we want to celebrate with you." No, they say, "What are you doing carrying your mat around? Don't you know it's a Sabbath? Why are you working so hard? Seriously? What's going on here? Do these guys get what this whole God and Jesus thing is all about?" I don't think so. I think they're stuck thinking that it's about following the rules and that God's favor and God's love is for those who get in line with how they interpret things. But I do want to point out another problem that exists here that's really important to point out. And this is one that I think that we all wrestle with. So if you look back at verse 3, you have it on your Sunday paper. Jesus walks by hundreds of people who are also in need of healing, and he only heals one man. What's up with that, Jesus? You know? Why didn't Jesus heal everyone? Did this guy win the Powerball of love or something? He got the lucky ball, and so he gets healed? I don't get it. Have you ever asked that question, why me and not that person? Why do good things happen to bad people, you know? Or why did that person experience a miracle in their life and I am waiting here for it? Or why is that person living till 100 and my friends right now are in the hospital with their 9-year-old who has pressure on her brain. They had to drill a hole to relieve the pressure in her brain. Why? What is up with that? These are real questions. And they're really messy, right? It's hard to figure it all out. I don't want to skip a verse that's really tough to deal with in this story. So when the religious leaders are trying to figure out who was it that healed this guy, the guy didn't know. But later he runs into Jesus in the temple, and this is what Jesus says to him. "Hey, you look wonderful. You're well. Don't return to the sinning life or something worse might happen." Okay, that can be a tough one. So is Jesus saying that, you know, if you're a sinful person, bad things are going to happen to you, and that's why you've been an invalid for 38 years? No, I don't think Jesus is saying that. I do think that we all know that some of the pains we experience in our life are things that are out of our control, and some of them are because we make bad choices, right? Bad choices have consequences, and we got to deal with them. So maybe Jesus is saying, hey, let's live in life and make some good choices as we go forward. That's for you, Etta. You keep that in mind, girl.
All right. But don't hear this causal thing. You know, Jesus healed this man before he confessed all his sins and before he even believed in Jesus. So it's not dependent one before the other. God's love is for all people. God's healing is for all people. So I'm sorry, I just had to deal with that before we moved on because I don't want you to think that I'm trying to skip over the tough stuff here. So Jesus responds to the Pharisees because they approach him, and this is what that interaction looks like. Basically, they want to kill him because now he's been healing people on the Sabbath, and then he says, you know, I'm doing my Father's business. So that sounds like blasphemy in the ears of these religious leaders. And but it also sounds like we get a picture into what the business of God is. And it's this, it's healing, and it's love, and it's forgiveness. And as we go through the book of John, we get this glimpse of what God is about. And so pay attention to how Jesus acts when we're looking through these stories, when we're talking about them in group life, or you're wrestling with them in soap. Pay attention to Jesus, because he'll show you God. So, did I just skip the why do bad things happen to good people? Because that would be really easy. No, but this is really messy. And I thought one way that we could deal with it well is maybe by sharing some stories from our community. And I want to ask Sandy Strathy to come up to share some stories with us about her life. So Sandy, why don't you come up? Do you want to sit on a... Are you cozy sitting? So I invited Sandy up because as we've been getting ready for this message on hope and healing, there's been a lot of great stories that people have shared from the community. And Sandy, I would like you to share your story about your daughter Roberta and the experience you had with her. Let's get that.
Just maybe turn it on.
Check, check, check. There we go. Wait. Check, check, check.
Okay, can you hear me now? All right. My husband Larry and I had four daughters. Our number three daughter was born March 9th, 1968, with spina bifida, which is an open spine. She had a major surgery before 10 hours old, closed up that spot in her back, on her lower back, and 10 days old, she had another major surgery because fluid was gathering on her brain, and so the doctor put in a shunt, which went down into the right artery of her heart and drained the fluid off from her brain. I didn't get to hold Roberta. We named her Roberta Lynn, and we call her Robbie. I didn't get to hold her till she was about 3 weeks old because she was in intensive care, and at that time, only the nurses held the babies. And I was 21 years old when she was born, and Larry was 23. So we were pretty much young people with not knowing exactly what was going on with our baby. We were told that she possibly would live till 12. Roberta is still alive. She has had a son, which wasn't supposed to ever happen. Mm. She and her husband had a son, and he has married and has a little girl that's 9 months old. Mm. And so Roberta is enjoying that. They live in Buena Vista, Colorado. I'm going to go back now into her childhood. As she grew, she had no control of her bowel or bladder. She was really a happy child, and we lived in a small farming community in Lisbon, North Dakota area, southeast corner of North Dakota. All the people knew who Robbie was. She wore all kinds of braces on her legs. Her feet just kind of dangled in. She didn't have any control of her, really, of any much below her knees. She became very strong in her in her arms and shoulders so she could arm wrestle any boy in school and win. And it was a, kind of a small, just a small town school, so there weren't that, probably 11 kids in her class. But anyway, when she started first or kindergarten and then went into third grade, I was in sales. I was selling home materials and gifts, and I'd won a trip when she was in third grade to Disneyland. So the six of us were going to go in this four-door pickup, camper, tent, camp stove, and looked like the Beverly Hillbillies, I think, going to California from North Dakota. But Robbie had, because of sitting on desks in school, she had developed large pressure sores where her body came down on the hard seats of school. And we had had her to the hospital just about every weekend for a couple of years with treatments on those sores. The doctors were flabbergasted. They did not know how to heal those sores. I probably could have laid a tangerine or a clementine in those sores, two sores on each part of her little bottom side, and they were deep. They were big. Tried, you know, everything we could to get them healed, but could not heal them. Okay, then we're going to roll ahead. I'm winning this trip to Disneyland, so we're going to go, the six of us. And I said to Rob, you know, you're going to be sitting a lot in the pickup. I was helping her in the bathroom, cleaning her up, and I said, you're going to be sitting a lot in the pickup on our trip. And I said, I'm just going to have to ask, we're just going to have to ask God to help us with these sores. I mean, I was concerned about this. Mm. 3 days later, we were at a campsite in Medill, Oklahoma, and we were going on to Altus, Oklahoma, to stay with some high school friends over the 4th of July. And I said to Rob, I'm going to walk to the, I always went to the shower with her, but I said, I'm going to bring a flashlight along to the shower today and check your pressure sores. And I looked at them, and they were healed. It was all new skin. They were gone. I had forgotten I'd even asked God to heal them, but he did it. I'm not saying that I'm anything special, but I do know I've seen several healings since. Usually it's, I got to ask God to do this, and then I forget that I asked him that, and it's done. Mm. And so one of the things that I was told, though, on another healing that I saw on the trip, because we went to Disneyland, then we went up to Washington to visit family. Part of it was my husband's sister and her family, and we had eight kids in a little house with one bathroom. I think there were maybe two bedrooms, so, you know, you can imagine 3-4 days of that. But some friends of my sister-in-law's asked if they could come and pray for Robbie, and my husband had went to an auction convention. He was an auctioneer. And I said, yeah, they can. And they prayed. One of her legs was about 4 inches shorter than the other, and the doctors always said they'd have to put built-up shoes on her. Now, she's got, you know, metal braces on and all kinds of things through those. She was eight then. And anyway, they were in the living room, these two ladies, and Sherilyn and I were there, and then all the other seven kids were just really quiet, but they didn't stay right there. But Robbie was sitting on a chair, and I remember they said to me, we're going to pray for healing. And I didn't tell them anything that had really been wrong with Robbie. And then they said, but you search your heart, and if you have any unforgiveness towards anyone, you ask God to take that out of your heart. And I did have some unforgiveness. I had unforgiveness for some teachers because they had used Robbie as a scapegoat in school. And it was like, I don't understand this, you know. And so I was dealing with these teachers in my heart. And I did ask God to clean my heart up and take that away from me once and for all. And anyway, they were holding her legs. And Rob said to me, Mama, I feel warm water running through my leg. and her leg grew out to the same length. And so those things changed our lives totally. Yeah. And I can't say that I always see the hand of God, but I have seen some really good things.
Yeah.
And he's good all the time.
Yeah. So that there are so many things that happen in the world that we can't explain. And but at the same time, I've had some conversations with you, and I know, do you get everything you ask for? Do you get everything you pray for?
No. And I pray a lot. I've been praying for 35 years for something, and I haven't seen the answer.
Yeah. And, I think that kind of gets at the mess, the messiness of this all. But I also, I've had a few interactions with you, Sandy, and your personality just emulates love. I mean, you kind of ooze out that kind of love, like, I don't care who you are a beautiful person to me. And so I heard you talk about this experience that you had at Walgreens, and I think maybe I want you to share about it, but my hunch is that you have had some experiences in your life where you've experienced just these amazing gifts of love, and where you've experienced these life-giving moments, and it's transformed the way that you are. So I want you to tell me and tell us about this experience that you've had recently at your job.
The lady that trained me to be a cashier at Walgreens, and I am not a computer whiz, so and with
she
all
had
computerized,
some patience.
She did. We were moving from the old building to the new building, and that was quite a process. So they were putting some things on really, 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 I mean, like nice Christmas things. It was in November, and I bought a couple of things there thinking I'd give them to maybe a grandchild or something, or a great-grandchild, and I bought a white angel that was really pretty, and I really thought I was going to give that to one of our family, and I got that back behind the counter. I paid for it and had the little slip on it, and I distinctly, it was like, no, that goes to her. And she was back there then. And she lives in a homeless shelter with two children. And not everybody at work knows that, but she did tell me that. And so I gave her that angel that morning. It was probably about November 15th. Okay, then, it's really busy at Walgreens, so we don't really get to visit hardly at all with our coworkers. And then last week, she was at the new store, and we were just, it was just a little bit calmer, and I walked up to her, and I said, Shante, what do you need? What can we do for you? What could I do for you to help you find a place to live? She said, I need a house to live in that's safe. And I said, well, between my daughter, who's a realtor, and I, maybe we could help find that. And, you know, I said that, and I thought, how in the world am I going to help her find a place to live? You know, and it was just like, and within 30 minutes, I was waiting on a customer, and I had to fill out on the computer. Now, you think of me with the computer and the, you know, all this, touch this. And the lady wanted to have a tax-exempt purchase. And I did get it done, but then I said to her, what do you do? And she had filled out everything, and she said, I help. It was something about opportunities, and should I help people find places to live and this? And it was like, bingo.
Wow.
Next customer was there, and I said, ma'am, before she finished, I said, would you give me your contact information? I have somebody in the store that needs to have this this contact information. She gave it to me, and I was able to just kind of say to her quietly, the lady's right down that aisle putting stuff on the cosmetic counters. She looked at her, and I watched her walk out, and she went, have her call me.
What a great story.
Yeah. That, and, you know, that was just, it wasn't me. I don't think that fast, but, you know, I know God put that in my being, that I needed to walk up to her and ask her if she needed help. And
well, thank you, Sandy, for sharing those stories. I mean, yeah. You know, it's thanks, George. It's not about how hard Sandy prayed. It's not because Sandy is special or different than everybody else. Sandy is a beautiful person, but that love that she exudes, you know, comes out of this love that she's experienced in her life. And Sandy is now both the recipient of healing, and she is the beginner, the starter of healing, the bringer of healing to other people. God works through us. God works through us in our interactions. When we sit and are quiet with that person who is in despair, when we listen to the questions that one another have, when we hear a diagnosis and we are scared about it, and maybe it makes us confront some impossibilities in our own lives, things that we can't control. But God says, I love you in the midst of those things. And that can be so simply felt by just being present with one another. I think that Sandy's story helps drive home this point that healing happens through relationship. It happens by being with one another and by being able to look into the impossibility that another person is experiencing in their life and saying, maybe I can't fix this, but I can love you in the midst of it. And that's transformative. That changes lives. You know, I think there's a story, sorry to screw up with Lizzie here running the media shout, jumping all over, but there's a story in the Bible later in John. It's chapter 11, and you may know or have heard about this guy Lazarus, right? So I want to read these verses. This is the beginning of that Lazarus story. So Jesus is on his way to see his friend Lazarus, who he heard was sick. And here's the verses. When Mary came where Jesus was and saw him, she knelt at his feet and said to him, Lord, if you had been here, my brother wouldn't have died. When Jesus saw her weeping and the Jews who came with her also weeping, he was greatly disturbed in spirit and deeply moved. He said, where have you laid him? And they said, Lord, come and see. And Jesus began to weep. And so the Jews said, see how he loved him. And yeah, the story continues, and there's this beautiful, triumphant moment of Jesus raising Lazarus from the dead. But is Lazarus here still? No. Lazarus had to go through dying twice. How fun can that be, right? But that's the truth. We all are mortal, right? We all die. That's just the way it is. And the more powerful love is not that God controls everything and fixes everything, but God loves us in the midst of our impossibility, in the midst of our immortality, in the midst of our sicknesses and pain. And God does that through us. There's no clearer picture of that than I think this ugly picture that's up here. Is God in control or in love? You know, if God was a fixing God, why do we have this story of at the end of John, where Jesus ends up on a cross and in a tomb? And it's because there is a deeper love than a love that fixes everything. There's a love that says healing is always a possibility for you, and no matter what circumstances you're in, no matter what depression you're dealing with, no matter what anxieties you're messing with, or addictions, or illnesses, or terminal diagnoses, there is a deeper love than that. And it's right there on the cross, and it says, I'm going to be here with you. There's no place you can go that my love can't reach you. And we get to live that out. And that can change people's lives. That can change our lives. And that is the business of what it means to be Jacob's Well in the world. So, you're not alone. Healing begins in these relationships. I want to share one more story, and I'm going to have Michaela share it. So Janet Nirnberg is a Jacob's Weller, and she couldn't be here this morning, but she was with me on Thursday. We had a few people over to our house. They're helping me imagine how we as Jacob's Well, birth a new community and possibly in St. Paul. So they're helping me wrestle with this, and I was really preoccupied with giving a message, so I asked them, you know, you guys got to help me out. Tell me what you guys think about healing and hope, and give me a story. So, Michaela, could you read Janet's story for us?
So I was thinking about healing and hope on my way home last night, and it will make me feel better to just share this, whether or not it helps you. I can't imagine being given a diagnosis of a terminal disease, nor do I have relevant experience of it happening to a loved one. I can tell you what it's like to see healing and hope from the perspective of a child whose parent was taken away from me when I was in grade school and replaced by a physically non-functioning version, who was sort of my mom, but not really the same person. Healing in this instance comes with acceptance and a positive attitude to let it be and make the best of what you have. I would argue that in any situation, terminal diagnosis, chronic disease diagnosis, life-altering experience, or just life in general, you have two choices. Wallow in your sorrows and let it get the best of you, or accept it and move on with life. I know so many folks with MS through my work with the society, and many people have taken the woe is me attitude, which makes it that much harder for everyone involved. I also think that kind of attitude actually makes them feel worse. There is something to be said about willpower, and those who have it just seem to do better overall. My mother, bless her heart, is the kind of person who never lets people see how much it kills her to not be able to walk. She is always smiling, always positive, and it makes me feel ashamed to know that I ever let anything get the better of me. At the same time, it's an inspiration. Everyone who knows my mom is amazed at how she's always smiling and laughing and in such good spirits, with so much of her normalcy stripped away. Some days I think I struggle with my mom's disease more than she does. I can't tell you how jealous I am of people who can meet their mom at a restaurant for dinner or whose mom can drive over to their house and walk up the steps and visit. If I want my mom to do any of these things or anything, I have to do the physical part for her. For many years, and still a little bit to this day, I carry resentment around with me because I don't have my real mom who can do real mom things, and I can't even remember when I did have that. But the more that I watch her struggle with the disease, fighting back with her positive attitude and willingness to just let it be, the more I realize that it doesn't matter if she can't stand or walk or do anything physical on her own. Because I or any other able-bodied person can do it for her, I can help her be normal. And once I realized that, I started healing myself, started letting the resentment go. She inspires me to do the work that I do with MS Society because I know there is hope that one day there will be a cure. There will be a way to restore the function that she's lost. There will be a way for everyone with MS to be normal again, to be healed physically, and a way for their loved ones to be healed spiritually. The hope comes not just from scientific progress towards the cure, but also from what her attitude and outlook, her healing, has provided. As a side note, I was also thinking about healing and about our conversation last night on what we want from a community, church or other. I can tell you that my experience through Jacob's Well, group life, and even the involvement in helping you with this new adventure is providing healing for my very broken spirit. God sure does work in mysterious ways, and I am in awe of that every day.
Thanks, Michaela. Janet's story and Sandy's story, these are some rope experiences. That's what we talk about as a community. These experiences in our life that bring us from one place in our journey of trying to figure out God and life to the next. And Janet's learned from her experience with her mom's MS that healing begins when they're there for one another. And it also, healing comes through acceptance. It comes through accepting the hard reality of our life, You know, when we come up against that immortality, when we can't fix things, that's the birthplace of healing, that acceptance. And it's really, really hard. And that's why we can't do it by ourselves. That's why we need one another. But when we do accept our reality, amazing things can happen. And it happens when we dare to live and to love and to hope, even in the midst of those hard realities of our life. So, as much as I want to scoff at Steve Martin's character, as much as this stuff doesn't really work for me, I think he has a good point in what he was saying. There is something to believing. You know, and each and every one of us can believe that God is a God of love, and God is a God who says healing always. Not healed, not fixed, but always healing. And I think this is the most beautiful thing that God says. You know, they say that the last sense organ to shut down when you die is your ears. And I have this sneaking suspicion that last word that we hear in our ears isn't death, but it's life. That's what it's all about, people. So I want to invite you to wrestle with that homework question that's on your Sunday paper this week. Where do you need healing in your life, and what could it look like? Think about that and share that with others. Reach out, because we can't do this alone. And there's a lot of people out there that need that invitation to just be real with one another and to share what it is that they're needing healing for, and just get out of the way and watch out for what kind of transformative experiences of God can happen in the midst of that. Amen? Amen.